much and what is it made of? So lots of questions. And David is going to be the first one trying to answer them, I think. So please go ahead. Thanks.
Yes. Hello, everybody. Can you hear me? Fine. Okay. So today I will talk about dust formation in AGB stars. Here on this picture, you see essentially the view of the observatory in Teramo in Italy, where I'm currently working. And my collaborators there are Sergio Cristallo and Luciano Persanti. And I also want to mention Stefan Bromley, which helped me a lot with my quantum calculations. He sits in Barcelona, and also my former supervisor and colleague from the Institute of Basel in Switzerland. So, what I also wanted to say, this is the highest mountain in the Apennines, and it's a really nice region, but it's in the middle of nowhere. So what kind of evidences of dust do we have? So first of all, I want to mention we find meteoritic grains, pre-solar grains on Earth with particular isotopic signatures. That is displayed on this plot here, where you can see here on the y-axis the excess of silicon 29, and on the x-axis the also the excess of silicon 29 you see really that these isotopes deviate from the solar values which are given here. And this you can measure. This is, for example, this is the Merchandon meteorite, where you find grains which have size of 1 or 2 micron. So, I mean, quite large grains. But you can also find evidence for grains in the spectra of stars. This is here a spectra of a carbon-rich star, where you can see at 11.3 micron, you see a silicate carbide feature. Moreover, you can also find silicate features, so in oxygen-rich stars, which here this corresponds to a SiO bending and stretching modes at 10 and 18 micrometers. And moreover, you have a more indirect way to find out that there are dust forming in stars, and that you can do over the depletion of atoms and molecules. So, where do these dust grains form? Here I have an illustration of stellar evolution, where we have a protoplanetary disk and a star-forming region. And on the left-hand side, we have the evolution of low-mass stars. They evolve through the main sequence and finally become AGB stars. And they form dust. And finally, we heard already a lot about planetary nebula. On the other hand, we have the stellar evolution of a high-mass star, which becomes a supergiant blue giant and finally ends up in a core collapse supernova. But actually, I will focus on AGB stars and their dust formation. So this is my topic today. So what kinds of types of dust we find? So we have a carbon-rich part, where we find grains of amorphous carbon, graphite, which is essentially displayed here, and also silicon carbide, which is the Murchison meteorite. Moreover, we also find oxygen-rich dust, which is essentially built from silicates. Silicates mean this are silicon oxygen metal connections of dust of olivine and pyroxene type. I will explain this in more detail later. And we have all kinds of metal oxides like alumina, titanium oxide, silicon oxide, and also iron oxide. Moreover, we can also find pure metals like iron, magnesium, or aluminium. This is not a complete list. This is just to give you an impression of what kind of dust we find. So what are the conditions in stars or in circumstellar environments to form dust? First of all, we should have not too high temperatures, otherwise the dust would evaporate and couldn't condense and couldn't coagulate. Just need temperatures, depending on the specific condensate, below 2000 degrees Kelvin. Then, moreover, we need sufficient high densities in order that the dust particles can form and the molecules can combine and stick to each other and grow, which is in the order of 10 to the 10 to 10 to the 16 particles per cc. Also, of course, we need the availability of the atoms and molecules of which the dust grain is made up. I mean, in low metallicity environments, for example, we cannot form silicates because we just lack of silicon. And also the time scales are very important. You need time that these dust grains can coagulate and condense and grow. And such conditions we find in the inner envelopes of AGB stars. And having a closer look, what happens in the inner envelopes of AGB stars? We have seen already this picture. This is a schematic view of the radius versus time. So Sophie and Joya already showed you this picture. Here you essentially see a pulsation of a star, which induces a shock, and the shock that accelerates the matter outwards, and the matter returns here, in this case, to it in its initial position and will be shocked again. So you have a periodic motion. And in this model, you have no mass loss because there are no dust grains. In this model, however, you have dust grains and a certain condensation degree, and you see you have a gradual outward motion in the outer layers, so you really can do mass loss. So the point here is that the pulsations really help you to form dust and also are necessary to drive the wind. And this is essentially, these are ideal conditions for dust to form. Having a more general view of the circumstellar envelope of an AGB star, we see here that we have the AGB star, where we know, okay, the AGB star has his inert core of carbon oxygen, the burning shells, and the convective zone. And then here on the photosphere, the shocks arise and travel outwards and will be damped. And in this region, let's say, which is from 1 to 8 or 10 stellar radii, we have the shock chemistry, so non-thermal equilibrium chemistry. And in this chemistry, we have a destruction and in the post-shock gas, also reformation of molecular species, which are listed here, mainly molecular hydrogen, carbon monoxide, water, silicon oxide, sulfur oxide, SiS, TiO, CO2, and HCl. In this case, this is a IK tau, this is an oxygen-rich star. In the corresponding carbon-rich star, you would have more carbonaceous species, but also oxygen-rich species because you have this non-thermal equilibrium chemistry ongoing in this circumstellar envelope. And here you see, okay, we can form also species which are not expected in oxygen-rich environments, like HCN and CS. And in addition, you can form dust. In this case, it was alumina close to the star, and further out, magnesium-rich silicate, which is called forsterite. And you see that owing to the shocks, you have a large range of temperatures and densities which prevail in this region. Further out, you have different processes ongoing. You have the interstellar UV radiation field, which cannot penetrate in this region, but is ongoing here and can do some photochemistry. But on this part, I'm not concerned with. I'm really focusing here on the inner envelope. So, coming to my model of this oxygen-rich star IK tau, where we have these periodic pulsations, I already explained. We couple to the hydrodynamic of these periodic pulsations, we couple a chemical kinetic network with round about 100 species, where there are atoms, molecules, and also dust clusters, which are connected by 440 processes. And the parameters we used for this specific star IK tau are listed here. As you can see, it's an oxygen-rich star with a CO ratio below unity. And it's also a Mira variable with a quite long period. And that's what I mean also with the time scale, which is necessary for the dust to grow, that we have a long pulsation period that these molecular dust species can really form in the post-shock gas. And we have quite low temperature, and the shock velocity. Yeah, you can essentially read all here. And the processes we're looking at are thermal decomposition, which acts at high temperature, neutral exchange reaction, collisional dissociation reactions, also radiative association, and moreover, thermolecular formations, which are very important in high density regimes, which means just after the shock has passed, because the shock compresses the matter. What is not included here are ions. Now I show you some results. So here you see a plot with a lot of molecules which are formed, and when we evaluate them at 8 stellar radii and compare them to observations, we see that we have a quite good agreement within an order of magnitude, except a few species, which is here, for example, phosphorus oxide, which is just due to the fact that the phosphorus chemistry is not very well characterized. Also, sulfur dioxide is not very well reproduced. However, we see also from the observations that there is a large error bar. And the silicon oxide is a bit lower than what is, you see here that the silicon oxide really goes into the dust grains, because this is at 6 stellar radii, the blue triangle, and the yellow one is at 8, so the silicon carbide depletes into dust. But overall, I would say the model abundances agree quite well with the observations. Now I'm coming to the part where, to the dust part, because we have dust clusters also included. The aluminum-bearing species here at 1 stellar radii are plotted in this plot, and you can see that dimers of alumina, so means Al406, are forming in the post-shock gas at late phase at 1 stellar radii. And when we transform these dimers into dust grains with a condensation routine, we can derive some grain size distributions, which are displayed on this plot. Here you can see the size in angstrom, and you see that at the full phase, so means at this point, we have a grain size distribution which peaks here around 300 angstrom, which is 0.3 micrometers, which is already quite a large size. However, our dust-to-gas mass ratios, psi, are rather low compared to observations with 10 to the minus 5. But we also form silicates. This occurs further out at 4 stellar radii, and particularly we form phosphorite grains, and they have rather low sizes with 0.2 angstroms, 200 angstroms. However, the dust to gas mass ratio is of the order 10 to the minus 3, which is quite fine with compared to observations. So I conclude here as a first part about the model of dust formation in AGB stars, that the molecular abundances, including the non-equilibrium species, HCN, CS, as well as CO2, are well reproduced, except the species NH3, ammonia, where we have no clue what is going on, why we cannot form it, because most of the nitrogen is locked in HCN and molecular nitrogen N2, PO, because this is because of the not well characterized phosphorus chemistry, and silicon dioxide, which is a bit lower than what is observed. We form large grains of alumina dust close to the star, but the amount of dust is too low to exclusively explain the observed mass loss rate or the dust to gas mass ratio. However, in addition, we have phosphorites grains which form at 4 stellar radii in amounts similar to the observations, although their mean size is rather low. That we could, in a model where I have used a higher density, we can change this also to higher sizes and even higher dust to gas mass ratios. So now I'm coming to the second part, which is quite preliminary, where I'm turning to the carbon-rich part of AGB stars. And I'd already talked about dust clusters, and you may have realized that dust clusters link or connect, are the precursors of dust, and link essentially the molecules and the dust grains. An example, you have seen Al406 and also the phosphorite dimer, but now I will focus on silicon carbide, and here, as an example of a cluster, there's the Si16C16. And in order to explore the configurations and the structures of these clusters in the energetics, we have to solve a many-body problem quantum Schrödinger equation. And the many-body problem has usually no exact solution. So in order to explore that whole space of different isomers which are possible now, for example, for Si16C16, we need parallelized supercomputers in order to get results on a full quantum level. And once we have done this, we get structures, energetics, and also reactivity of those species, which are up to date not very well characterized. So here you see a crystalline bulk silicate. This is essentially a periodic structure with a unit cell of size 4.4 angstrom. So you have to imagine that goes in X, Y, and Z direction. This is periodically continued. And it looks, this is found in grains, but that looks quite different from, for example, what here is Si6C6, which has just a very different structure. You see here there are carbon rings, and there are the silicon atoms are segregated from the carbon atoms. And this is just due to, because we have quantum effects here, and we have a high surface to volume ratio, and also we sometimes have unsaturated bonds. And so you can imagine that such a cluster, Si6C6, has millions of possible structural configurations, so millions of isomers. And in order to avoid to investigate all of them with a supercomputer, we perform candidate structure search by molecular dynamic and Monte Carlo simulations. And once we have done this, we found candidate structures and will subsequently refine them on a full quantum density functional theory, level of theory. And now we'll present how this molecular dynamic works. So you here use a simple potential, which is called the Tersoff potential. Essentially, it is given by a repulsive part and an attractive part, which is modified by a parameter, which essentially says you something about the bonding angle of silicon and carbon. And moreover, it the whole thing is multiplied by a taper function in order to have the distances between the silicon and the carbon atoms right. So this taper function is 1 for the right distances and goes to 0 for larger or smaller distances. And this potential can essentially account for the covalent character of these clusters, covalent bindings, and also for the segregation, so means separation of the silicon and carbon atoms. And here we find that carbon 5 and carbon 6 rings form, and the silicon atoms go, we'll find around it. And moreover, with this potential, we performed simulated annealing, high temperature simulations, and did a subsequent decrease of the temperature with a so-called Gulp program. And how that looks, I will show you now, because I'm a fan of animation. So you will see here the green carbon atoms, and the pink are the silicon atoms. And now you heat that whole thing up. You see here the carbon 6 ring, carbon 5 ring. And now it starts slightly to dissolve because the temperature is too high and the thermal motion of the single atoms is just too large, and it starts to reconnect and build new structures. But in the end, everything stays still on the same. What is the worst thing when one atom would just drive apart? Because then you wouldn't have something to calculate. Yes, and you see, okay, the carbon still remains more or less together, although the rings were dissolved. The other simulation I did is the Monte Carlo simulations with a so-called Buckingham potential. This here you see the Coulomb potential, a part that corresponds to the Pauli repulsion principle and the van der Waals interaction. And this accounts for the ionic character of the cluster and alternating SiC bondings, because you have anions and cations. And we did also those simulations using the landscape, the Bassin-Hopin algorithm. And how that looks, I'll show you in the next simulation. Windy. So here you see that I just turn around the molecule, the cluster, to see how it does look. And now I start connecting them. And you see we have alternating SI and C bonds. And finally, we arrive to a stable cluster, which looks like the double number 8 or the double infinity sign a bit. So yeah, you see this here now. And so with those methods, we have found the ground state clusters, which are the most stable clusters from Si2, C2 until Si16, C16. And you already see here the Si16, C16 looks a little bit like a fullerene almost, and is a quite spherical thing. And I was quite lucky to find it, because all others you see here, chains of carbon and rings of carbon, and this Si16, C16 has really these alternating SiC bonds, which you also find in the bulk and in meteoritic rains. So this Si16, C16 is a potential candidate of the cluster connecting molecules and dust grains. And here I also plotted for several ground state clusters the vibrational spectra, and just made a simple Lorentzian fit around them in order to see what their radiation spectra is. And here is the binding energy versus the cluster size, which is almost monotonically increasing. And also I plotted the HOMO-LUMO gap. HOMO means highest occupied molecular orbital, and LUMO means lowest unoccupied molecular orbital. And you get out of this all of the quantum calculations. So coming to my conclusions, we found the second part of the preliminary results. We found new stable SIC clusters with sizes smaller than 16 units. They show segregated C5 and C6 rings. And however, we have for n equals 12 and 16 very stable clusters with alternating SIC bonds, which resemble the bulk-like properties. And this 16 in particular could be a potential candidate to be a transition from cluster chemistry and bulk chemistry. And I'm still not at the end. I still need to do a better comparison to the observations. I would like to determine a theoretical rate, which is temperature and density dependent, and also want to explore the formation routes for clusters which have unequal numbers of silicon and carbon. Yes, thank you for your attention.
Thank you, David. We have plenty of time for questions.
Say, I have a question about your part one.
Yes.
So you said that your phosphorite grains that you form are too small for wind driving through scattering. Right?
Yeah, or rather on the, let's say it that way, rather on the lower
end. On the lower end. Yeah. So, but, and then you said that if you increase the density, you get larger grains.
Slightly larger, and more, I get a larger dust to gas mass ratio. Mm. This is essential.
But my question is, because as you know, IK tau is a rather high mass loss rate star. So this what happens true. If you lower the density instead?
You get less dust in amount.
Okay.
Yeah.
I would like to continue on that question.
Okay.
Fine? Yeah. Since continuing on Sophia's question, you indeed have very low dust to gas ratios when you only have your aluminium oxide grains.
Absolutely.
However, in these low mass loss rate stars, there are some of these stars in which we mainly see the emission from crystalline and amorphous aluminium oxide grains. Yeah. Potentially, there are some silicates present. They might be translucent, for which reason we do not see them. So I was wondering if there is a mechanism where you could, by which reason you could increase the dust to gas ratio, but only based on aluminium oxide dust formation.
So we did that. We did also had an accumulation model that we used several pulsations in order to the aluminium grains to grow, and we see that the shock did not destroy them so much, so we waited for a longer time that and put in some new aluminium oxide clusters mm-hmm. and molecules in order to grow them.
Yes. And did you get reasonable dust to gas ratios?
Still, it will be around 10 to the minus 5.
Not low. So I'm
too low, but it increases then not 2.7, but it goes to a higher value. Maybe 3 times. Yeah.
Okay, question here.
Are you planning to, very nice, by the way, are you planning to give the same kind of results of oxygen-rich star also for carbon-rich, like the dust grain size and the radius at which they will condense? And also the other question is, you want to compare the SIC feature with the observation. I don't know if you already did it. How will you choose the sample of star that you?
So, I mean, to the first question, yeah, I somehow plan to also for the carbon rich to derive grain size distributions. Yes, I'm not yet there. And sorry, the second question was.
You say you want to compare the SIC feature with the observations.
Patients, yeah. I mean, there is a very, very pronounced 11.3 micron silicate feature, which arises from phonon frequencies, which is rather coming from the bulk material, so larger let's say.
Yeah, my question was if you already decide which stars you will pick or.
So probably I will compare things to IRC 102.16 because this is a very well studied or the archetype of carbon stars, but I also agree to compare it to other stars. If we have some observational data there.
Yeah, so. I can give you some suggestions.
Okay.
one final question.
No, go ahead. Yeah. Maybe we have to.
Okay.
So I think you slipped away from my question. So you said you form less dust, but of the same size distribution or smaller grains?
In both in terms of the amount and also in terms of size, because the in the condensation routine also directly goes the number density of the clusters we have, and if we lower the overall density, then we also lower the cluster density.
So is it correct to say that for like the normal AGB star, you would have problems with forming a wind, essentially with the kind of dust that you form?
Yes, I agree with that.
Sorry.
Last question for Sylvie.
Or at least for the MIRAS, for the MIRAS models we did, yeah.
Yes, I was just curious about how you calculate the temperature. I mean, is it done self-consistently with the dust formation? I don't know what is the mean heating term, but I thought it most, I guess collisions between dust and gas must be important, so.
So I mean that the high temperatures after the shock of course hampers a bit the formation, but as you have a long period, you can do it really in the cooling post-shock dust where the density is still high, but the temperature has already decreased to a point where dust can form.
So what you mean is that the temperature is not regulated by the dust but by the gas cooling.
Sorry again.
You're saying that the temperature is regulated by the gas. Mostly by the gas cooling, not by the presence of dust.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
More or less. Yeah.
On that note, we conclude and we thank David again. It was a nice talk.